From the St. Louis Public Radio newsroom, this is The Gateway. It's Monday, July 14th. I'm Jonathan Aul. Climatologists are working on how to account for climate change when we think about droughts.
Is it really a drought, or is this just the new climate of this region?
We'll learn more about why today's normal climate may not be the same as yesterday's. That's coming up on The Gateway. The St. Louis Board of Aldermen has acted to make it easier to build homes in the city. St. Louis Public Radio's Rachel Lippman has more on the legislation sent to Mayor Kara Spencer on Friday.
Right now, the city's zoning code says single-family homes can only be built on lots that are at least 4,000 square feet. That means thousands of lots that could be used to construct more housing remain vacant. The problem is especially acute on the north side, says Board President Megan Green.
When we ask, you know, why is there not development happening? Why is disinvestment taking place? One of the problems is if we're saying that you can't build there, then of course there's not going to be building there.
The measure approved by aldermen lowers the minimum lot size needed for both single-family and two-family buildings. Aldermen also voted to make it easier for families to remain in housing after they have a child. I'm Rachel Lippman, St. Louis Public Radio.
Missouri House lawmakers want to be more proactive on complex issues. The House Future Caucus formed to examine things like a rise in artificial intelligence and disaster preparedness. The five-person caucus wants to seek out experts and hold hearings on those issues before they turn into legislation. Democratic State Representative Marty Jo Murray of St. Louis says there's a lot of benefit to the Future Caucus's approach.
We can spend a little bit more time to bring the subject matter experts in, have those deep dive public hearings where we can really talk about things and not have all those external factors putting pressure on us.
Murray was a guest on the Politically Speaking podcast. As Missouri residents long plagued with radiation-related illnesses celebrate their inclusion in a federal compensation program, there are others who feel snubbed. St. Louis Public Radio's Will Bauer reports that a single Metro East zip code did not make it into the latest expansion.
Residents of Venice, Madison, and Granite City have also pushed to be included in the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act, known as RECA. Larry Bergen is a former employee of a facility where radioactive uranium and thorium were processed. He's also a longtime advocate for RECA. He says the RECA expansion is bittersweet because Missouri residents finally got what they deserved, but
at the moment, these group of people, small group of people here in Venice and Madison in Illinois have been left out once again. And in part, I believe it's because of their status, where they stand in life. They're a poor black community.
Bergen says he remains optimistic that a future expansion of RECA is possible. Congresswoman Nikki Budzinski says she believes there will be other paths forward. I'm Will Bauer, St. Louis Public Radio.
The Illinois Department of Public Health says a measles outbreak in the southern part of the state is over. Public health officials say 8 cases were reported in southern Illinois in April and May. None of them were serious, but the department says everyone was unvaccinated. Nationally, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reports nearly 1,300 measles cases across the country, the highest number in 33 years. States will soon have to pay millions of dollars more for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program under the massive federal spending legislation that passed last week. Harvest Public Media's Anna Pope reports that food advocates worry it could lower the number of people receiving the food benefit.
The new law will make states responsible for a larger portion of SNAP administrative costs next year and will add additional costs if their program's error rate reaches 6%. Error rates are over or under payments to recipients, not fraud. Luke Elzinga with the Des Moines Area Religious Council's Food Pantry Network says states will have to do more with less resources.
I think that's a real concern of what are the unintended consequences of states putting so much focus on this payment error rate, you know, because they could be on the hook for tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars.
Some lawmakers say the measure cuts waste and fraud, but food advocates say the changes will harm those who rely on SNAP benefits. I'm Anna Pope, Harvest Public Media.
Drought is defined as an abnormal period of dryness, but climate change means today's normal might not be the same as yesterday's. The National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine are now working on a new framework that factors climate trends into how we think about drought. Harshan Ratanpal has more on why that's so tricky.
Missouri State climatologist Zach Leeser works in an office divided by time. On the right is the old way of doing things. Dozens of scratched and torn leather-bound books filled with more than 100 years of handwritten state and local climate data. Cracking one open, Lisa turns to July 15, 1936, when the city of Columbia saw a high of 111 degrees.
This was the second hottest day on record ever in Columbia.
A climatologist in the early 1900s would have spent each day collecting data with weather instruments and recording them in these books. But today, Leeser spends much more time on the left side of his office, where his computer is displaying weather models. One of his primary jobs is interpreting vast amounts of data every week to determine which parts of the state are in drought.
It can be precipitation data. We add soil moisture data. We have stream flow that's analyzed, some satellite data as well.
The job of a climatologist has changed a lot in 100 years. The climate has too. And those changes are making it harder to tell what is or isn't a drought. That's because drought is a measure of dryness relative to a, quote, normal baseline. But what if climate change is changing what's considered normal?
Is it really a drought, or is this just the new climate of this region?
That's climatologist Joel Lisenby. He does drought research out of the University of Colorado Boulder and is trying to answer that question. And he says it's a bit situational. There's no one answer to what drought even is. A 1985 study found over 150 published definitions of the term.
You really need to understand what type of drought you're looking at and why you're asking that question in the first place.
For instance, a climatologist whose job it is to take the long view of weather and climate might look at how dry things were over 100 years ago to determine if a place is in drought. If conditions are consistently getting hotter and drier, as they are in the American Southwest, maybe drought isn't the best way to define it. Here's Leeser.
Now, is this drought or what we call aridification, which is the entire climate getting drier?
Climatologists are now coming together to figure out how to characterize drought because their proclamations have real practical consequences. For example, one of the tools used to assess drought is the U.S. Drought Monitor. It's updated weekly to track dry conditions and their severity across the country. Some federal policies that give farmers emergency relief money are tied to the Drought Monitor. If it's not calibrated to the new normals caused by climate change, that money might not be going to the right places. Here's Lisenby again.
We're talking real dollars, taxpayer dollars, and we really want to make sure that we're getting that assessment correct.
Understanding new weather and drought patterns is also important for planning ahead.
Building a reservoir or a pipeline, are you going to have enough water during the dry years? If that normal is lowering, is the drought period also lowering with it? These are some unknowns.
Back in his office, Leeser puts the 1936 climate record back on the shelf.
I'm glad your eye caught these when you came in.
He says Missouri doesn't really get to those scorching temperatures anymore. But the state is prone to drought, and its average temperature is trending upward. He'll be watching the National Academy study for how to incorporate that into his drought assessments. I'm Harshon Rattenpaul.
That story comes to us from member station KBIA in Columbia. The Gateway is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, music by Ryan McNeely of Adult Fur. We are a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis. I'm Jonathan All, and from the St. Louis Public Radio newsroom, this has been The Gateway.